All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another very rigorously researched and well thought out episode of the Board Game Triangle. So just to briefly introduce ourselves, I am Sarah. I'm one of your hosts. I'm joined here by Tim.
Hello.
Normal voice. Good job. And Ken.
Hey, guys. This is Ken.
And we are bringing back our guest from the last episode, Jared. Say hey, Jared.
Hello, the internet, the world. Thanks for having me back.
All right. So
I think he's a man that needs no introduction. Really, we're the ones who need introduction still, apparently. Right. So
yeah, I mean, maybe a few people know who we are. Probably not, though.
Nah.
From our listener base, probably most of them don't know who we are, but
all right. So our episode today, we're going to be talking about IP games, and we'll talk about what that means later. But we'll start out with just some introductions about, you know, what have we been up to in the last couple weeks, and then we'll jump into our discussion about IP, intellectual property, if you will. But yeah, so what's everybody been up to? Tim, what have you been doing?
Well, I had Ken over to play my very longly awaited Heroes 3 board game, or Heroes of Might and Magic 3, the board game. It's got a huge following.
You probably made a good halfway through it, I think, right?
Oh, yeah, almost. Before, no joke, this is not a lie, there was water leaking out of my ceiling light.
What?
And so I had to basically...
Because we were hearing drip, drip, drip. And I believe it was the other person at the table who was like, that sounds like you have a leak.
Yeah, so my wife comes running down the stairs like, there's water coming out of the ceiling light. And I'm like, you're bullshitting me, right? And sure enough, there really was. And so basically I had to stop the game in the middle, which I was really upset at because it was going pretty well. But yeah, so that was a very fun, adventurous weekend. But yeah, overall...
We all agreed that I was probably the winner.
Most likely, sure. Ken always the winner, of course.
A winner with an asterisk, always.
Did you have to move the game or stop playing?
Yeah, I mean, it was just one of those things where like I can no longer enjoy the game knowing that there's water coming out of my ceiling light. So, yeah.
I mean, we possibly could have put the cover on your gaming table and preserved the state for a future day, but
we
didn't. We just put it away.
Yeah, that thing is a monster to set up and tear down. So it was just one of those things that like I just went ahead and just put it away. Not really worry about it. But overall, what's nice about talking about that is technically an IP game. And it's kind of a good... Yeah, I know. It's like we planned this. But it's a really good segue into how does... Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things to where I have a huge amount of nostalgia invested in this game. It's something that I grew up like 20 years ago playing, and I probably have the most amount of my playtime hours in a video game into the video game. And so getting the board game version of it, it was like, okay, how will this live up to my expectations? Mm. Am I going to be more lenient towards it? And I wanted to really get a feel for like, okay, here's Ken who knows nothing about this IP and what this game is like.
I wouldn't say nothing. I'm familiar, but I wasn't really that into it at the time. So yeah, but yeah.
Sure. So, and it was like a good idea. It was kind of like a nice glimpse into, okay, well, what will his view be coming into a completely, you know, or practically unaware of any of the environment around it.
Definitely with very much less emotional attachment to the original property, for sure.
Absolutely. So Ken, what are your initial thoughts? I know it's tough because
we
had to stop in the middle of it, but...
Yeah, no, I think I told you afterward, I feel like based on the half I played of it, I'd probably rate it, you know, maybe a 7 or 8. Playing it further and seeing how the player conflict interacted, I might have felt better about it.
Yeah,
I did feel that the mechanics were you know, decently well executed. It was interesting to be exploring tiles and having, you know, look at the buildings and see what they did. I think the scenario we were doing for the intro scenario is a pretty basic scenario, I would assume. So I'd be interested to see more of the scenarios. I definitely could see it climbing from that 7 or 8 higher, even just from a first playthrough entirely. And especially
cool
if I played 2 or 3 times. I also am a little bit concerned about what the replayability of it is beyond the initial exploration of the board and exploration of the initial mechanics. Like I don't know from that first half playthrough if I want to play it, you know, 5-10 times, or if I play it 2-3 times and kind of am ready to move on. So At this point, I would put it down there somewhere, where I put like Dice Forge, where it's kind of a fun gimmick. It's interesting, not necessarily something that I would want to play dozens of times.
You keep Dice Forge's name out of your mouth.
So, Jared, have you heard of this game, by the way?
Sorry, what?
Jared, have you heard of this? Have you heard of this game at all? Because it had like a big rumbling on BGG when it like finally got to people's doors. Mm-hmm. Like it was like the number two on the hotness for Board Game Geek. So I was curious to see if you saw that blip or even got your own copy to test.
And what's the full title again?
Heroes of Might and Magic 3, the board game.
Heroes of Might and Magic 3. Okay. Yeah, no, I have not played it. And
chances are probably not if you even had to ask to clarify the name.
And I have not played the video game.
So yeah, it's because it's based on the third of the computer games in the sequence, that's why it's Heroes of Might and Magic 3, even though this is the first of the board game, because right. It's based on the third release of a computer game that was big in the early 2000s, I think. Is that about the right time frame, Tim?
Yeah, late. It's like the very, very late 90s, like 98,
late
99, 90s,
early 2000s kind of time frame.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'm not much of a PC gamer, so you know, it's something that I'm not surprised passed by my radar. I think the last PC game that I played like was Roller Coaster Tycoon. So
it's a similar era to that, though. I mean, that Roller Coaster Tycoon was also big late 90s there, you know. But
that would make a good game, like a board game too.
Yeah, it was funny when Tim was trying to explain the game to us to play the board game. His way of trying to teach it was to first show us his favorite computer game by pulling that up on his TV and sitting there and playing through a few rounds of that, because like, oh yes. The easiest way for me to explain this is going to be to teach you the computer game first and then try to tell you the differences between that and the board game. But
I want to
highly that. Effective, highly effective.
hold on. I want to unpack that for a second. So the question is, did it work?
I mean, I would say that the mechanics you're showing me from the computer game were all mechanics I was personally probably pretty familiar with already. And so you probably could have described those mechanics to me in 3 or 4 sentences and I would have known what you're talking about. Whereas I think with the other player that was there, she was not automatically familiar with all those gaming mechanics. And therefore I think for her, it probably did help a lot more to understand what was going on and how the game would play. But yeah, for myself, like I, you know, yeah. Tell me I'm a hero who's exploring a world in a turn-based mechanic, finding resources that I exploit in order to make my, you know, be able to build new buildings, let me build different kinds of armies and troops. That's all stuff that you give me 3 sentences, I know what the game is to that level.
Yeah, sure, but, sure.
But it was still fun to see you gushing over this this computer game that you really loved and see that emotional engagement with that. So
yeah, and we'll touch upon like that idea in general a little bit more like later on in the segment as well. So
like, is it necessary to introduce someone to the original property before you show them the game? Like, you know, is that, I've never heard of anyone doing that specifically for a board game.
Well, so the reason why, yeah, I mean, the reason why I did that was it was really easy within a very few minutes to translate most of the game that way. I would say there's probably other games where that's not really true. Like I was able to, in 1 or 2 turns, show like, here's how the game works. And then I'll be able to break down, well, here's kind of the differences. Whereas I don't think that translates well in probably some.
I think games. If you want to teach someone Firefly, having them watch the entire series and then the movie helps them understand the rules of the game a lot better, right?
Is that not
how I teach Firefly, Jared?
Yeah, no, for any Lord of the Rings themed game, we got to have like a full 12-hour movie sesh.
That's only natural for sure.
Oh, of course.
But like, can you imagine making somebody watch like an entire game of League of Legends so you could play mechs and minions that's not at all related to that?
No, that's brutal. That's brutal. Nobody should be subjected to that cancer. Absolutely.
So
not.
To me, that it's good that you brought that up, because that's a game that I love. The board game, I think it's fun. It's got great theme and humor, and gameplay is solid. I've played through the campaign. And I've never played League of Legends. And so to me, it's not like it's barely an IP game to me, because there's very little that I have in connection to what the original source is. To me, it's just a good board game.
To be fair, the only thing that's really IP about it is the figures themselves.
the idea of minions translates really well to that game. If you're a League of Legends player, like, I mean, I think that it translates well, but there's not any mechanics of the game that really exist at all in the actual game other than slaughtering minions. That's it.
Because I mean, I would even say that, you know, something that's just a reskinning of Monopoly with IP art and things, that is an IP game. It's still, I mean, there's no mechanics that are part of that world, but it's an IP. You're utilizing this brand and this world to sell copies of Monopoly that nobody would ever want to own otherwise, I assume.
But now it's not just Monopoly. I mean, there's so many re-themes. I mean, yeah,
before we jump too much further into it, maybe before we, I guess we'll jump into that.
dive down the hole.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you want to get into that yet.
We could jump into Ken. We'll just jump over to Ken, see if he has any updates. Same with you, Jared, if you have anything. And then I say, let's just hop right in because we're already ready. I could tell. So
yeah. I think other than the board game with Ken, I think the only, biggest thing I had going on was I did a bachata choreography presentation to room full of people at a social last Saturday. So that was last Friday, I guess. So that was kind of fun. But not a whole lot of other going on in my board gaming life. Just a lot of other random activities.
Yeah, kind of same for me. I've just been on a concert bender here lately. Like every weekend I've got concerts for like three weekends in a row. So last weekend when you guys were playing,
am I talking to Ken now? I thought, are you sure this is not Ken?
So to be fair, I did not go to the one that was last weekend because I was like,
did you buy tickets and not go?
I sold the tickets. I did sell the tickets, but I sold them at face value. I'm not a scalper. Don't worry. But it turned out, like I saw on Reddit that like, apparently this show was terrible and people were leaving halfway through it anyway. So kind of glad I didn't go. Yeah. It was one of those 20th reunion shows.
Are you going to name drop this terrible
thing?
No, I will say no. I have mad respect for this band, but it was a 20th reunion show and the guy like has been through it. So
Jared fits right in now. I like it. He's ready to fucking call some people out. Let's go.
No, but the first one that I went to though was like a Postal Service Death Cab for Cutie 20th anniversary of their two big albums.
That sounds and pretty it fun, was actually.
Insanely good. Like it was amazing. And I can't wait to my next one is the Decemberists next weekend or this weekend. So that'll be really fun too. But I did not go to my middle concert, who shall not be named.
So it was their 20th anniversary of the time that they had that one good song.
Uh-oh. Pretty much.
Oh my
pretty
God.
Much.
Ouch.
No. So like Postal Service, I didn't realize such a good album all the way through. Anyways, not a whole lot board game wise. I did post on the board game subreddit and the internet hurt my feelings. So.
Yep. Turns out, and this will be news for a lot of people. People on the internet are sometimes mean.
Yeah, just dicks for no reason. Absolutely.
Everyone's nice to me, though. I don't understand.
So we don't have to talk about that.
Yeah, nobody's ever mean to Jared on the internet.
Never. Absolutely. Nothing but praise, right?
All the comments on my channel are just praise.
Yeah, I mean, YouTube commenters are notorious for being wonderful and kind people who just say nothing but sweet things.
So, Jared, any updates? Mm-hmm. I mean, just remember, guys, be nice. There are people. There are people behind these things.
That's true.
Anyways, Jared, any updates since our last episode?
The past few weeks I was on this little podcast. Some people have heard of it. The Board Game Triangle.
Keyword being some.
Yeah. I've also done
this is like when a movie says the title of the movie.
Yeah. Boom. Other than that, I've played a couple of different board games. I've done a few different, I've received a few review copies to play through, and my girlfriend and I recorded a couple reviews, so those are going to be set to come out in the next couple weeks as well. Games like Clash of Galliform, Atlantis Rising and the Monstrosities expansion. We're going to be doing one.
Dude, I love Atlantis Rising. It's so good.
Yeah, that's great. We'll be doing a review for Ninja Sloths, which is a like kind of a newer like card game. So stay tuned for those. Yeah.
That's awesome. So I don't know if we like really reintroduced you. So we'll go ahead and do that just in case people missed our last episode, which shame on you. Go back, listen to
shame.
It.
Shame.
But we have with us our guest.
Yeah, I'm back by popular demand.
Yeah, this is Jared of the YouTube channel Meeple Mentor and also the author of Push Your Luck, the Board Game Dictionary. So we say a lot more about that in the last one, but definitely check out his channel on YouTube for those reviews and things coming up. That's super exciting.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, so are we ready? Are we ready for this IP discussion?
I think so. You had a warm-up question for us, I think, around it. Even though I think we're pretty warmed up, but you're ready to turn it to 11, I know.
We're pretty warmed up, but yeah, I mean, much like Postal Service, turn it to 11. Anyways, before I jump in with the warm-up question, though, I do want to just clarify, because Reddit got on to me for this. What do we mean when we're talking about IP games?
That's a good question. Yeah. And like, because what games do we want to cover, I guess, with this?
I mean, the actual definition.
Yeah, what's our actual definition?
So IP is intellectual property. So it's technically anything that's already an existing franchise. Actually, there might even be a definition in my handy dandy Push Your Luck dictionary. Hold on. IP. Let me see if I put it in here.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that there is.
I would love for you to pull that up.
I definitely looked earlier and I think I saw it.
Here it is. Intellectual property.
Dude, you want me to please, sir, enlighten us.
All right. Let's start it off on the right foot from the official Board Game Dictionary. An acronym for intangible creations and unique ideas designed by a person or group. While IP covers patents and copyrights, it also represents a variety of intellectual goods. In the board game hobby, an IP is a new game creation that stands alone within its own stories, characters, and universe. Games can be based on other IPs and included as a theme or central idea, such as any Star Wars game or Disney game. These are also called licensed games.
Yeah, so this is the clarification that I got burned on by the lovely people of the board game subreddit, because I just asked about IP games thinking about licensed games. But yes, technically an IP, like a board game itself, can be an IP. Like Railroad Inc. is an IP.
Is an IP.
Yes.
Yeah,
once
sure,
it's created,
sure.
It becomes its own IP. And so you have to specify, is the game itself its own thing, or are you saying it's based on an existing intellectual property? And I think for the purpose of this discussion,
that's a really good clarification.
We're discussing the idea of incorporating existing IPs into a tabletop game.
Yeah.
And I guess to make that even more clear, it's like there's a movie that exists and then somebody turns that into a board game or a TV show or a video game. That's in general what we'll probably touch upon most.
Unless the movie was first based on a board game.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Like Battleship, the movie, the board game.
I was actually wondering. So like I was mentioning earlier, I think the simplest form we see of that is just reskins of games with different art and names from other games. And so I mentioned Monopoly as being one that's notorious for having done that with all kinds of stuff. But Jared, you're going to talk about how there's a number of other games that are currently doing reskins with different artwork and intellectual properties, right?
Yeah, there are a lot of modern games, even older games. Like everyone thinks of Monopoly as like the most reskinned, rethemed game in the world, which is probably still the case. But modern games still get rethemed and reskinned.
I bet that's true. It has to be, right?
I mean, I would think. Mm-hmm. I know, for example, I just lost it. I get onto a train of thought.
I know how that goes.
That's all right.
Mm-hmm. I know Codenames is one that I know has done. Codenames. A Marvel, Codenames. They've done, several other ones that would do that. And that's why it's interesting because
Zombicide.
The Marvel-based Codenames does change the game in that since you're trying to give hints that point out pictures on the board, what it ends up really rewarding is the comic book Uber Geek who can link three of those characters together with a very obscure hint that almost nobody else is ever going to get. And then they get frustrated with all the other players because you didn't understand their hint. It would have been really obvious if you just read the same 500 comics that they had.
I think something like
that does not sound fun for anyone. That sounds terrible.
While it doesn't sound fun for a lot of people, I at least think that that is a more legitimate reskin than some other reskins, because at least it's actually adding substance by providing the IP, whereas other things just feel like cheap, lame money grabs, like especially Monopoly. Like, there's been like tiny variations to Monopoly, based on what version of it there is, but as a whole, almost none of the mechanics are changed. It's literally the same game.
And the changes that are made don't make it a better game. Like, they aren't fixing the problems of the game either, which is annoying. If you're going to change it, fix it. But
So I was thinking, Monopoly is as the worst at doing that. But I think even modern games like Munchkin get rethemed now. And, you know, you can get the South Park Munchkin game.
Ooh, there's Munchkin rethemes, huh?
There's rethemes already for that. I think Catan has a few themed Catan games now. Clue is a classic as well that typically gets rethemed. Like, I have the Disney Haunted Mansion Clue, I think.
So where does Wormspan fit on this spectrum? Because is that a reskin of Wingspan, or is it different enough that it's kind of a new, like, just offshoot game?
So I would say that it's its own new IP based on an existing gameplay mechanism, which many games, you know, will do. They'll reiterate on existing gameplay, but it's its own thing. It's not related to Wingspan in any other way. It's more like an inspiration.
Interesting. Yeah.
Gotcha. And plus it's dragons, so take my money, you know?
I think we've been criticizing a lot of the reskins as potentially being money grabs. And again, if it's pretty art, things we like, that's fine. But I think, do we feel like something being IP based on an existing or prior IP automatically makes it necessarily better or worse as a game? You know, Tim, you were talking about wanting to get Heroes of Might and Magic 3 because it was based on a thing you loved. Do you think you would have bought that Kickstarter had it just been a unique, new IP based on its own thing instead of something that you, you know, used to love and play? Or
I could almost unequivocally say no. I probably would not have bought it. It's not something. It would have been something that I looked at the cost of it, looked at what I could tell it was offering at the time, and I would have been like, it's too much up in the air. Like, who knows what this is going to turn out to be? There wasn't really any good gameplay videos at the time, but one thing that was pretty apparent was, and I guess this is kind of immediately jumping off of that question, but one thing that was very apparent was the developers who were on it were clearly passionate. Like, nobody goes back to make this game because it's a money grab. They go back to make it because it is something that they care about, and it was something from their childhood that they were passionate about. Because why else would you revive a 20-year-old IP that, like, for all intents and purposes, it was largely still only popular in Europe. For the most part, most US people have pretty much divorced themselves of this series a long time ago. And it wasn't even that big in the US in general. But it ran on such old computers that it remained popular in Europe for a very long time. Maybe from that angle, you could argue that you could still maybe see it as a money grab, but...
Are you saying that Europe doesn't have modern technology?
Yeah. Basically, Tim is saying that Europe is old-fashioned. They still have castles. Yeah. I've seen pictures of them, you know, they still have them.
They're huddled on their,
you know, never mind that Tim works for a European based tech company.
They're huddled over their Macintosh.
They old as fuck, man.
Computer and a dank, you know, like cobblestone, cold, dreary castle. So
thematic, you know, exactly.
I have a question then, because this kind of stems off what Sarah was asking about Wormspan being a reskin. By the same logic, would King of Tokyo be a reskin of Yahtzee? Because it's essentially Yahtzee with monsters. I just dropped a bomb on you.
No, that is a cool take I was not expecting.
I think it is, and I think it is a reskin that makes Yahtzee much more attractive to a younger audience than we normally play. It's like, whenever I'm introducing King of Tokyo to an older audience, it's exactly like, say, this is Yahtzee. And that, cool, they're in, they play. Yep. If I'm introducing it to a child or to young adults, I say, hey, do you want to be, you know, Gigazor? Do you want to be, the Cyber Bunny? I don't tell them anything about the mechanics of the game to try to sell them on the game. But, you know, for an older audience, I get people to play King of Tokyo all the time who are like, oh, I don't want to play any of your fancy complex board games. And this is just Yahtzee. And they're like, oh, well, cool. I'll play Yahtzee.
Yeah.
So, yes, 100%.
I want to push back a little bit on the reskin idea here, though. So,
okay.
I think this is a good way to flesh out what is really truly a reskin. In this case, if you look at King of Tokyo, absolutely. Like, the I don't want to just say just because it's all about rolling specific dice and matching them up that that quantifies or qualifies as a reskin, because there's a lot more, there's a lot of other things going on in King of Tokyo that make it, you know, stand apart. You have the whole mechanism of going in and out of Tokyo. So that already by itself is a very different strategic decision that now has to be made. Is it complex? No. You know, that's the whole point. It's meant to be a gateway game.
But I also, when I'm playing, the people I'm talking about telling us this is Yahtzee, they don't go in and out of Tokyo unless they have to.
Right.
They go in when they absolutely get a claw and they have to go in, and they leave as soon as they can. Right, and they're otherwise just playing Yahtzee. I've absolutely played with people who just play the game purely as Yahtzee, and they are not interested in the rest of the
staffing club. That's totally okay. But that also, just because they play that way doesn't mean the game is a reskin. It just means that that's how they play it, and that's fine. There's no wrong way to play it. It's what you have fun with. But there's other things being added that add substance and layers to the game, and I think that that's enough. Same with like Wormspan. It sounds like, I personally have not played it, so I can't speak to it, but I just know of other reviewers who have talked about it, and they say it definitely stands alone as kind of its own game, and it's largely inspired by Wingspan.
I've played Wormspan a few times, and I can say that it definitely stands on its own as its own thing, and it does a lot of things differently, and the theme is different. Mm-hmm. I know, like, birds and things with wings or whatever, like, okay, sure, but, you know, at some point you have to draw a line and say, no, it's its own thing. It really is, and the gameplay itself does stand on its own. It's a great game. I actually, Holly and I both prefer Wormspan over Wingspan.
Mm-hmm. I think the distinction in my brain is basically, do I think that they could have created this new game by pasting different pictures on top of the current pictures? Because I feel like that's what they do with like the Monopoly reskins.
Yeah.
So if you add any different elements, any other things, you're creating something new, because otherwise every single, you know, worker placement game would just be a reskin of every other worker placement game. Like, there's got to be some
distinction. I think also, Sarah is a really... Sorry, go ahead, Jared. Go ahead.
Okay, I was going to say there's also the distinction of who's making it. For example, Patchwork, every iteration of Patchwork is the same game. It's a reskin, but at the same time, we don't really call it reskin. We say, well, the publisher came out with a new version, but I guess because they made it and it's not anyone ripping them off, you know, it's repackaging the same game in a different way.
I mean, I would describe it as a reskin, though, if I was telling my friends about it.
So I guess, is reskin going to be a term?
Just because it's easy to see it.
Is reskin just a term that we're going to use like for a different company trying to make a different game from someone else's property?
I would tend toward the idea that it's really anytime you make the game look differently, but the gameplay doesn't really change. That's something I even look at thinking about something like Twilight Imperium.
Much more general.
Are the later versions of Twilight Imperium reskins of the earlier ones? Are they just updated, facelifted? They're not. They change mechanics. They change balance. It's a different game compared to, I'd say that, a game that, sometimes you see a game that's 20 years old and they put out a new version of it with just updated graphics. I personally would tend to think of that as being reskinned, because you've just updated the art, you've updated what it looks like, but the game, it still plays the same. It still feels like the same thing.
I was going to say, but borrowing from like movie terminology, like the term reboot might work well for this, and in the sense of it's not just a reskin, but there's added features and added quality components sometimes, or, maybe it's a version of the game that is like a special edition and it includes all the expansions. It's not just a reskin. It would be like a reboot, but it's still based on the original.
Yeah. I think that's fair. That's totally fair to talk about in that context. I think also the term reskin is largely coming. I think it actually really starts to come from the video game community, where you have microtransactions and you have these same characters. They don't change anything about how these characters function. It's literally just their outfits, visuals. And so that's why I think the term reskin, I think, really translates well to some of these board games, where I don't care who is re-implementing what. It's literally just a layer of art on top of the exact same game. Like, they haven't changed anything mechanically. And so that's why kind of reskin rolls off the tongue for me, especially from like a League of Legends background, where every character has like 20 different outfits that you can pick and you pay for. And it's just... It's just a reimplementation of all the same thing. That the character doesn't function any differently.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good point, Tim, with the reskin aspect from like League of Legends is definitely what's like comes to mind for me for that one. Okay. So I feel like we've talked a lot about reskins, but let's jump back into like actual IP licensed games. Like, I don't know. How do you guys feel about how they should feel? How do the board game IP games relate to the actual property?
I want to bring your question in onto another idea that I think relates to the whole skinning idea, because one of the challenges I think these board games face that it seems like recent versions of these IP games actually are pretty good at avoiding overall is how do you make this feel like the theme of the game, they're just taking the IP and slapping it on another game. Like, could this be literally any other game and you just slapped the IP on it and like, oh, you know, job well done. We did it. Very much how like video games of old basically were like, oh, this movie's coming out and we want a corresponding right. game to it. And it's like the game is just trash and they literally just try to throw something together. And I think
I enjoy Dune Imperium quite a bit. I don't know how much Dune Imperium feels like it has to be a Dune game. You know, like it's there's some elements of that that are pulled in and it references some, you know, some Dune characters and settings, but I feel like that could very easily be a fresh IP game and I wouldn't think any less of it. It doesn't feel like Dune to me playing it.
I don't know. I might counter that because the like specific cards that come out that are that relate, it would take a lot of world building within a board game to like explain what the Fedaken warriors are. Whereas when you see it on the card, you know who that is from like the actual like Dune series. So you know that like those are going to be like your hardcore warrior dudes and you're going to understand the card better.
I think that these are really good points that I think how well it's integrated into the gameplay is what we really need to dissect here. Because I think like there's plenty of examples I can think of that do this poorly. Like for example, the American Psycho board game, which is really more of a card game. It could be anything. It really could. Like I did a tutorial video on it, but essentially it's just a trick taking game with a pasted theme and artwork of American Psycho, the movie. But I will agree with Sarah that Dune Imperium, the board game, actually has quite a bit of integration to the source material, enough that it's not just as easy as saying, oh, well, if this was, you know, if this was this random person, you would start to, like, the different mechanisms of what you're doing in the game start to fall apart. But using the cohesiveness of the Dune IP really is what brings the whole picture or the whole package together. So my point on this is in evaluating, is it just a game that is, you know, a very bland anything could be, is how many mechanisms are tied into the theme? And if you changed everything about this, how easy is it to understand?
Yeah, to your guys' points, I think you're kind of saying that because there is already this predefined world, there are some givens to the mechanisms of the game that you just kind of get out of the box that you don't have to really provide any backstory to. And it kind of makes more sense than if it was just like a standalone, their own new IP, I guess, or its own standalone game. And now you kind of have to explain like what this thing is and why it's dangerous or why you might care about this. Or when there's different factions in the game, obviously, and they have their own powers. And there's some things that's something that also you don't really have to explain. It kind of is more thematic because it is these factions that actually exist in this world. So even if in some ways the mechanics don't perfectly play, like maybe you could argue you could have skinned it with another IP and it maybe plays the same, you still are getting, there is still value coming out of the fact that it is a Dune skinned game, I guess.
I guess I'm kind of differentiating between, like I said, the artifacts and the character things like that do help you kind of understand and do make sense within that, and that is cool. But to me, what I'm thinking of, I'm things that feel like the property. I think someone like you know, like Star Wars Rebellion or Firefly, that like you feel like you are in and exploring the world. You are interacting with a storyline that feels similar to what we're expecting when we go and we watch or read a book on those worlds. Whereas like, you know, then with Dune Imperium, I see those characters, those cars, I know what they, who they are and what they mean. But I also, you know, I feel like, they don't necessarily give me the same, I don't feel like I'm in the Dune world when I'm playing Dune Imperium in quite the same way, which, you know, I don't know, maybe that's just, my subjective experience of it, but, I can enjoy the world building and enjoy the, you know, the IP of that without, but it's, you know, playing Star Wars Rebellion, I'm, you know, I am the Empire sitting there trying to hunt down this pesky rebellion that keeps popping up in weird places. That's who I am now.
I don't know. Dune Imperium does make mm-hmm. you choose like worker placement based on different like factions in the series though. And it like, it's mm-hmm. so good. It's so on theme as far as like the Bene Gesserits mm-hmm. are going to give you like secret stuff and it's going to pay off more later because like, if you're really super deep into the series, you know that the Bene Gesserits are like the only ones that survive. Sorry, spoiler. mm-hmm. But, you know, so I feel like that's cool because you can, how you play the game might be influenced by like how you feel about those different factions. Mm-hmm. Like how you know that the, like, if you go for the Fremen, you're going to be pretty strong fighting, that kind of thing. Like, I don't know. I feel like that is super thematic.
As someone who doesn't know the series very well, that's cool just even hearing about that and yep. how well that translates to the game. That's
I think what we're kind of dancing around is like your familiarity with the IP will affect your enjoyment, because at the start of this podcast, Tim said, let me introduce you to this IP outside of the board game so that you can enjoy it better. Essentially, I know you said it's to learn it, but honestly, you can learn a board game without knowing anything about, you know, where it came from. But you were excited about the IP and you thought that, you know, really, if he had a better understanding of the source material, he would enjoy it better. And I think similar with this, I think if you knew more about Dune, you know, if you had a more in-depth knowledge of like the series or the books or what have you, you would probably get a bigger enjoyment from the game because you would see more of these subtle connections maybe you know, I think Sarah noticed. But that's not to say that an IP is enough, because clearly we've seen plenty of games that have an IP that, yeah, it's like, oh, well, okay. So for example, this, the 007 board game Spectre, that's another one that I did a tutorial for, yeah. But like the game itself is very abstracted. It's very bland. Like it literally could be anything. You got cubes, you got like some random cards that have like some missions on it that just say like, oh, have two of your workers here. And you're like, is this really 007? Like, I don't feel like I'm doing any kind of spy stuff at all. And yet most people know 007. And I still think there's just not enough in that game to really hook anybody. So it's really just the gameplay at that point. So, you know, we got to kind of look into games that are great and use the IP effectively, but then also, you know, contrast them to games that, you know, aren't great and don't use the IP effectively.
Yep. Well, and you mentioned in our last episode, Frostpunk is a game that has a huge amount of overhead to be able to play the game. And I would definitely say, I mean, it's a game, again, I bought it, I played with some friends, we had a good time. I don't think there's any way we get through that game if it was not based on IP that captured imagination, because it is a very, very heavy game, and it was requiring a lot of work, and it's not necessarily super obvious why it's worthwhile unless you have an emotional attachment coming into it. And I'm even not sure, like, if I play it 2-3 more times, I may be done with it, because I don't know if it's either going to have to get easier for me to be able to stay on top of the game as I get familiar with it, or I'm going to stop wanting to play the game. But it is that theme that made it really exciting, interesting enough for us to even try it. So,
and some concept, you know, behind the scenes of knowing like what kind of decisions you're going to be asked to make. Yep. So like the last episode you talked about sending kids into the mines, right? Yep. Like if I started playing a game and it was making me ask, like, answer those questions, make those decisions, I might be like, what in the world?
The other option is to create a shelter for the children, and they stay in the shelter through the rest of the game. So, you know, you definitely have a choice there to go both directions. And like I said, I'm not even sure mechanically which is the better choice. In our gameplay, I was told while setting up the game, hey, we're sending the kids in the mine. That's cool, right? And like, cool. I mean, that was a first round of play. I don't know if that was a good strategic move or not, but you know, it had emotional appeal to us.
I want to jump off of real quick how Jared brought up how I kind of introduced people to the Heroes world using the video game, because I think almost subconsciously, I think part of the reason I also wanted to do that was, hey guys, like check out how well they translated the video game to the board game. And I think there's just like a small part of me that like, even if you don't know the IP, you can at least respect and appreciate that they honored the original game and they tried their best to elicit that feel while also like, you know, Heroes of Might and Magic 3 is a fairly long game. Like if you play it by yourself, you could easily play it. It's like Civ 5 where you could play it for hours, days, like it could go on for a long time. So they captured the magic in a very small, short package. And it was clear that it was passionately done. And that's something that I think you can respect regardless of whether you really care about the IP or not, you know?
Well, and that's something like, and we haven't actually played the physical Slay the Spire yet, but we played it online as a simulated version.
I have, it's so good.
The Slay the Spire, board game definitely pulled out all that same feeling of playing the Slay the Spire computer game. And it is a good game. I would hope we can pitch it to and play it with people who haven't played Slay the Spire, digitally as a computer game, but people who have played and loved Slay the Spire computer game, I think are going to definitely be interested in playing that board game because it does give you that same feeling.
Absolutely.
Of playing the other game.
I watched the Dice Tower review of it. And I mean, that's basically what they said. I mean, they said that they loved it because of how closely it honored that while still making changes enough to make it its own game. Mm-hmm. Like that's its own challenge. Like that was already a card-based deck building video game.
Right.
And they still made it feel different enough and honor the source material that they did an amazing job with it. Go ahead, Jared.
What about games that are improved as a board game, even though they didn't start as a board game? Like, it's based on an IP, but the board game is better than the original IP. Because, we're talking about how faithful the board game translation is to the source material, but sometimes being so faithful to the source makes it not as great on the tabletop. For example, again, I would argue that Frostpunk being very faithful to the video game is its own detriment to the tabletop, So I think there's got to be,
it makes it a more brutal game than it. Yeah.
There's got to be some examples of some great games that are better as a tabletop game than their original source version. I can't think of one offhand, but I know like there was that Jetpack Joyride app, like on your phone, and then they made it a tabletop game. And it may or may not be more fun than the actual $2 app on your phone. I don't know.
Man, that's hard.
I'm wondering if maybe we can't think of examples of this because if the original IP isn't that mind-blowing, you probably wouldn't want to buy a board game of it.
Oh, actually, I do have an example. I'm looking at my lists from like years ago. Not everyone's read the book, but a lot of you probably heard of or played the game. The Pillars of the Earth. Okay. It's based.
Oh, I have heard of it. Yeah.
It's based on a book. It has a board game that is amazing. Artwork's there. The gameplay's tight. It does a lot of unique stuff. And games after have copied its own game mechanisms. And I would say that for a lot of people, if this is their entry point to, Pillars of the Earth, it's probably just as good or better than just reading the book, because it's really not about, I don't know, like speaking to the theme, I'm not really sure if it's as important, the characters and whatnot. It's really just a very simple, like, let's come together and like build this like chapel or church or whatever in this area and you collect resources, but the gameplay is solid and yet it's based on an IP that maybe people don't even realize.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I can't say that I hear much in that direction. I think more often than not, you hear it from the other direction of how many of them fell short for various reasons. And I was actually talking to my brother about this. He's a huge fan of both Deep Rock Galactic and Monster Hunter. and he played the board game versions of both of them. And he felt that they really fell short of, let me put this into context, because as a whole, he's not a huge board gamer in general. He kind of plays it with my family just because, you know, they just play together. But if you asked him if he'd rather play a board game or video game, he'll take a video game 10 out of 10 times, right? But he's still like, he's still fine with playing him. And my dad got both of these games because, you know, they're games that he likes. And so he's like, oh, let's give the board game versions a try. And the biggest problem he had with them was these are the sorts of games that just, as much as they try to, just didn't feel like they could really extract the same feel from the video game. As an example, Deep Rock Galactic can have a bit, it can be a bit chaotic. It's very, like, very twitchy in terms of, like, it's a, you know, it's a first-person shooter kind of thing. Or it's at least, like, it's something where it's, you have to aim and things like that. Mm-hmm. And the board game just doesn't capture the chaos of the original game, no matter how much they try. Like, it just, it's probably a fool's errand to even try to do it. And at least they probably thematically tried their best to honor it. But at the end of the day, you're just not going to capture the same feel. It's just impossible. And he felt the same way with Monster Hunter World, where normally you have to do all this like ridiculous prepping before you go into a fight. And he just said the board game just couldn't capture that essence enough that it was just like, it just felt like, it was lacking substance, not from a lack of trying. It's just a video game can just do so much more on that level.
So I guess that brings up a really great question of when you see a game that's an IP based on a property you love, are you more or less critical of it? Like, if it's something that you just are in love with, are you so excited to see it as a board game that you don't care if it's great? Or do you want it to be really good, or like they shouldn't have even bothered?
I would say that we tend to be less critical of games that we come into already familiar with. For instance, the first Kickstarter game that I backed was Dark Souls, the board game. And I'm a huge fan of the video game series. And the game, the board game translated very well in terms of like replicating the feeling of playing Dark Souls, the video game. But unfortunately, it means that the tabletop game is gruelingly hard and extremely long. And for people that aren't really into Dark Souls, it's probably kind of a slog. It worked great for me. I was kind of forgiving of its, you know, obvious flaws because I was a big fan of the IP. So I ended up playing it more solo for a long time, which you can do, but I was definitely seeing how, you know, when I introduced it to people, they were not as excited about it if they hadn't really been into any of the Dark Souls games or lore or anything with that.
I want to piggyback off that real quick, Jared. And how would, what do you care more about then? Do you care about that it honored the IP more or that it's a good game? Because regardless of you being more forgiving to an IP, you know, to an IP-based game, if you like the IP, are you more forgiving towards honoring the IP or, you know, it being, you know, a good game?
I think in this case, I was forgiving because they were trying to honor the gameplay of the video game so well. So I was like, okay, so the reason that these are a problem on the tabletop is because it's so accurate to the video game's experience. So in that sense, I was forgiving of, you know, the problems that it was creating. Just by the nature of them being devoted to the fan base. But I understood why people wouldn't like it if they're not as into, you know, what Dark Souls is.
I also think it depends a lot on how extremely into the licensed material you are. Because I think you reach a certain point, or I reach a certain point, I don't know if you guys are like this, where you're like so hyper fixated on this thing that you could... If there was a Bee and Puppy Cat board game, that's like two of my favorite things, right? Board games and Bee and Puppy Cat. I don't care if it's the most garbage piece of shit game ever. I'm going to buy it and I'm going to try to play it all the time because I want more from that universe. It could be anything. If anybody wants to put out a Bee and Puppy Cat board game.
What is the game? I've never heard of
it. It's an animated show. Yeah. It's an animated show on Netflix that's like very cozy, like... just kind of vibes. So it's great background. I have it on all the time. But if somebody made a board game of that, like I really don't care if it's dog shit. I'm going to buy it.
And not just buy it and put it on the shelf to be able to be a completionist and have the art. You're going to want to play it because you want more of that world, even if it's Candyland with with art from...
Yes.
I mean, Heroes 3 was the same way for me. Yep. At the end of the day, I spent a lot of money on that fucking game. And if it ended up being a piece of shit, I didn't care. Like, at the end of the day, it was something that I 100% knew,
right,
at worst, I was resigning to nostalgia. And that's fine. You know, I really don't care because I thought at least at minimum they were going to honor the source material because of who it was coming from. And if it ended up that mechanically it just didn't play out to be a good game, oh well, whatever. Like, I can now hold the army units in my hand that, like, I played, you know, virtually when I was a kid. And you can't replace that for me. Like, I at that point, I don't care. And so...
I agree. I'm with you there on the Dark Souls thing as well, because I also spent quite a bit of money on all those expansions for the Dark Souls so that I could have the completionist of having, like, all the content for the video game and being able to, you know, role play the campaign as I wanted. But the cost of it in this case was, I think, because the miniatures were so, you know, detailed and large that, like you said, it's awesome to have, like, the ability to display, like, this really cool looking huge, you know, boss figurine from a video game series, you know, at the very least.
It's amazing, I think, with given what we're all saying about how, yeah, we'll throw money at a property that we love, that more of these games aren't just absolute trash. I think it really shows that a lot of these game designers really do care about the properties that they're trying to adapt and really are trying to do something, you know, good for the community. Because
no, Ken, that is a really good segue into kind of what I wanted to bring up, which I think, unfortunately, just because we got so wrapped up in what we were talking about, I wanted to take a slightly zoomed out view of what we're talking about here, because I want people to know just how many IP games there are out right now. Because when I was doing some research before, I was actually even surprised. I know. Don't make that face. Look, it's a one-time thing. We're not going to make any research after this. All right. Never again. Right. But I just wanted to get a landscape. Like, I already knew some off the top of my head, just being involved in the board game scene. But when I actually, like, look back, here's just a very small list I assembled of, like, IPs that most people are going to recognize. So there's God of War, Horizon Zero Dawn, Skyrim, Fallout, Dark Souls, Portal, Cyberpunk, Slay the Spire, Frostpunk, Doom, Civilization, Gears of War, League of Legends, Resident Evil. There's like 10 Resident Evil board games somehow. I didn't know that. Deep Rock Galactic, Monster Hunter, we mentioned those. And then those are just video games. Those are just recent video games. There's also movies. There's, you know, movies and shows like Star Wars, Dune, Stranger Things.
That's surprising.
Surprising. Stranger Things, yeah. Back to the Future, Jaws, Lord of the Rings, Marvel, Power Rangers, Firefly, Battlestar Galactica, Alien, all Disney IPs you can think of, Harry Potter.
Dracula.
So, like, there is games for literally anything. Yeah, exactly. Just to give you a landscape, most of these games also have come out fairly recently, and most of them, at least from looking at reviews of them, people overall will say... most of them will not say this, the theme feels tacked on. I would say that's pretty rare for recent games. Sometimes their worst crime is they're either too simple, you know, trying to simplify the source material to make them a little bit more digestible, or they're just bad games because they just don't translate well to a board game format, try as they might. So,
but again, most of them seem like they made an honest effort to provide a meaningful adaptation. I don't, you know, we talked a lot earlier on about, you know, things like Monopoly just having tacked on themes. That doesn't seem like it's what most of these things are doing these days.
No, reskins don't seem to be common anymore. It seems like they do try to honor the source material much more. You don't see, like, God of War, the reskin. I mean, there might be other, like, shortcomings to it. Like, you know, people are kind of talking about the God of War, like, card game is, like, kind of meh. You know, you can only play it once or twice. It tries to honor the story, and then it's like, meh. But, you can't really say that, like, they at least didn't try to, like, there wasn't any care at all in it. It didn't feel like it was a cheap cash grab. It just may not be a good game, or may, you know, very quickly outlive its welcome. But yeah,
the Portal board game, not great. The theme is not captured. There's not even a portal gun. It's this weird puzzling game.
Wait, what? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's not great. It's not great. yeah, I don't recommend you try it. It's called Portal, the uncooperative cake acquisition game. It's not fun.
It's a good name.
Yeah, it's a good name, and that's where the goodness stops.
That's the last good thing.
That's the last good thing. However, another video game, so kind of Cuphead, the fast rolling dice game, that's pretty fun. I think that captures the freneticness of the video game pretty well.
I want to know how they made Jaws into a board game. Like, what screams board game about Jaws? Nothing.
There's actually people seem to generally like the game. Yeah,
it's really good. Actually, I like it. I like it a lot. And it is thematic.
That blows my mind. That seriously blows my mind.
I've heard good things about the Power Rangers game too.
Yeah, there's a lot of Power Ranger stuff. Yeah, God of War, the card game, not great. Man. A lot of the Disney theme stuff I found has been lackluster, but I think that's because they're targeting the general population and or small children. So there's just not a lot of depth to it. So even those feel kind of like a waste of time, like the Jungle Cruise game and the Haunted Mansion game and various other themed after their rides, which is a weird thing, but that's a lot of them are getting their own board game.
You know what's really interesting about Disney IP games? I think Villainous is like a mini, I don't know, individual study of IP and how good and bad it can be, because every character is from a different Disney IP. So if you're not familiar with Disney Villainous, you're playing a villain and it's very asynchronous, but you're still like, you have take that mechanics that you can play against other people who are trying to achieve their own separate goal from you. Mm-hmm. But every villain has their own kind of mechanism for winning and their own set of rules. And some of them are like fantastic. Like Ursula is, you have to get the person to, I don't know, sign a contract, and then you get lots of different stuff that really thematically goes with her thing. And then there are some that are just like, this is stupid. Hmm. And some that are like, oh, I can never win with this. So it's almost like, I don't know if it's good or bad, because it depends on which one you pick.
It's completely a throw everything against the wall kind of a game. It's, yeah, it can be fun. It can be really, really annoying.
But you think, oh, it's Disney.
I tend toward to default on the, it's really annoying because there's so much that it can be. But yeah, you're right. There are some of the things in there that are really clever and really cool. And
there are certain villains that, like, you know, you think it's Disney, you think it's going to be a pretty easy game because, like, that's obviously going to be targeted toward a more general population audience. But, like, there are certain characters in Villainous that if I'm playing with a new person that's not really a board game person, I'm going to be like, don't play that one. Like, don't play Ursula for your first game of Villainous, because it's actually kind of complicated and you have to realize that you have to burn through the deck pretty quickly.
Yep.
So, like, you're not going to pick up on that.
I think games that offer that kind of range and variability are good games. Like, that's exactly why I like Spirit Island. Like, no, like, go play the basic Spirit. Then you can play some of the advanced ones that are more fun, but they're a lot more challenging. And I like that everyone then can still play at once. And you can play something that is to your specific, you know, knowledge level or familiarity.
Are there some IP-based games that you would recommend to someone because not only the IP is strong, but the gameplay is so good that if they have no knowledge of the IP and you don't introduce the IP at all, you just say, let's play this game, and I know you have no idea what this is, but you're going to enjoy it. Like, what's your top one or two really suggestions? Good. I've got my own that I would suggest for people because there are some really good games that just, I'll start. Use an IP so well that it doesn't matter your familiarity. All right, so this might be a surprise. I'm not that big into anime, but I have a board game that is in my top 10 IP-based games. Cowboy Bebop, Space Serenade. All right, it's
really? There's a Cowboy Bebop board game?
It's a lot of fun. It combines worker placement with deck building, and it's fantastic, good fun, and I've only seen a few episodes of the show, so, like, I just like the game.
This may not be surprising to anyone, but I'm a huge anime fan.
The podcast listeners, you should see their faces. I'm saying this. The other one I would recommend strongly, even if you've never seen these movies, The Godfather Corleone's Empire is a great worker placement game. It's a lot of fun. It is themed after the first movie of The Godfather, but the gameplay is so fun and, you know, basically just general mafia themed. You know, most people can just kind of grab that. You get to actually do missions where you like kill other players' workers and toss them into the Hudson River. And, you know, like it's silly, it's fun, it's strategic. And whether or not you have familiarity or, you know, respect for the movie, it's a great game. And honestly, that's also a game I would put on my list for like great gateway games, because it tends to be something that people are familiar with, but it teaches you worker placement and hand management a little bit without being too complex.
Nice. Dude, yeah, they even did a good job with the box art of Cowboy Bebop. That's really good, actually. I dig it. I dig it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my. It's taking every ounce of restraint not to use this time to look for online. I'm seriously, seriously wanting to look for it right now. That's amazing.
Mine, I only have one. It's kind of interesting because I would say that Heroes for Me kind of scratches that a little bit, but at the same time, I'm not sure that when I look back on it, so the two games I'll say then would be Fallout Shelter, actually. Fallout Shelter is by itself just a standalone, really good short worker placement game that I think that you can also get a little bit more enjoyment out of it knowing the universe. But like by itself, it's really it doesn't overstay its welcome, and it's a really clean worker placement game.
And the Fallout IP is just so accessible generally. Like it's the visuals on it are cool. The dystopian part of it is cool. The exploring different vaults part of it is cool. So I could see that really lending itself well to a board game, but also being easy to explain if you're not familiar with it at all.
Yeah, I mean, coincidentally, I did not like the actual adventure version of the Fallout board game. It fell really short for me. But the Fallout Shelter game does a good job of capturing the magic while also still really just kind of standing on its own. Like, overall, you could even argue the theme is maybe pasted on, but does add some enjoyment to it. And recency bias wise, but I also had played it before the game actually came out, and that is definitely the Slay the Spire board game. It is incredible. I think it's one of those games that, kind of to piggyback on Jared's question and almost leading into another question, but I want to also give Ken and Sarah a chance to answer the question. But one thing I'd kind of like to lead into there is, with an IP game, do you want it to honor the source material to the point that like it's not really a new game, if that makes sense, where it's not like they're exploring new territory with it, because a lot of the times they're taking the video game or movie or whatever, and they're basically trying to encapsulate that and package it as a board game rather than taking the IP, honoring the IP, but doing something new or unique with it. I can't say that there's a lot of things doing that. And Slay the Spire is kind of a mix of the two, because they took a single player game and they made it a cooperative game, which to me is a huge leap. Like mechanically, they changed some things to make it transition nicely to be a board game. But overall, the largest leap that they made was it makes the game feel way different in that it's cooperative, and it makes comboing certain things totally different compared to the video game. So I would largely say they did do something unique with the game, and they actually did something new. So
yeah, I think that you know, existing IP based game can add to, you know, to the work and to the art. I think, you know, if the game is providing you with, I mean, you just new art from that world, I think it can be really exciting for people who, you know, whether it's a book or a movie or a computer game, just having an aesthetic and art and miniatures and things for that you can consume and enjoy, that in itself can be a new thing. You're providing someone to have a tangible ability to, you know, have these miniatures from this computer game that you like, that you can, you know, you can sit on your bookshelf and you can play with, you can move around. I think, you know, having mechanics that like, one, I'd say my favorite you know, intellectual property based games that I have would be Dune Imperium, which you know, I don't necessarily know that it to me doesn't necessarily feel like I'm in the world. It doesn't necessarily feel like it's adding a lot. It is referencing a lot of things that I enjoy. And I do like seeing, you know, the things that, you know, like Sarah was talking about with the Bene Gesserit or understanding how interacting with the emperor and the corruption and money and things like that. It triggers things that I know and I'm familiar with, but I also really like how the game, I think, does a great job of nailing good interaction between worker placement and deck building that not a lot of games do well at. So like the things that make me love that game are just kind of the references of things that I like and game design things that I love. Another IP based game that I like quite a bit is I was gonna mention Lords of Waterdeep is another one that I enjoy, and that's one that, I mean, it's based on, you know, D&D based kind of things, and being the references, the things you're doing, they aren't really at all the same as playing Dungeons and Dragons, but they utilize a lore and a different approach to the world than what you normally have in the game. So, you know, I do like games. I've mentioned several games that feel like the same way and give me that same kind of a sense of being in that world, exploring and doing. But the ones that are actually my favorites are ones where it more kind of takes that lore or takes those artifacts and then allows me to have a different experience of a different kind of an approach to things. Mm-hmm. I do, you know, I think it is really neat with Slay the Spire, how it manages to preserve that feel, but it's not necessarily the biggest thing I'm even looking for in trying to go with an IP-based game. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you add new lore, have new storytelling, these are all things that can definitely pull someone into it where, you know, yeah, is it new? Maybe not, but, you know, is it a new chapter? Is this a new storyline? Is there new art? Those are all things that can make an IP-based game something that, for fans of the original, are absolutely make it worth pursuing and chasing and buying.
Yeah, I mean, speaking to both what, like, Ken and Jared had said in terms of just the game by itself being standalone good, that's another thing that I think Slay the Spire really struck gold. Like, my wife would watch me play the video game a lot in person, and anytime I like offered, like, I think you would enjoy this if you played it, you know, and she's like, oh no, it's just too intimidating. Just being a video game, sometimes it just already makes it like, it adds that level of intimidation. And so even though she'd watch me and like recommend, oh, you should play that card or something like that. But now with the board game, first of all, she was convinced that she did not like deck builders at all. And so she played this and immediately was like, she told me, she's like, apparently I just had the wrong idea about deck builders because I love the way that Slay the Spire does it. Now, that could either just speak to just how magic that game is, or just as a whole, like, it's just a good game. And I think anybody would enjoy it, despite the fact that she even knows about the game and has watched me play it. It was just one of those things that, like, she was playing it because I wanted her to play it with me. And it was enough that she's like, she was really enjoying herself playing it because it was so done mechanically so well. Like, the theme for her wasn't overall doing much. It just made it easier for her to jump into the world, but as a whole, didn't really care about it. So I know that game could stand alone, I guess, is kind of what I'm saying overall. Like, I know I could get anybody to probably come and play that and they would enjoy themselves. Yeah, it's so good. Really excited.
Yeah, you've kind of sold me on it. I want to play this now. I haven't played it. Every podcast episode, we find another game that I haven't played that we should probably play. I honestly don't have an example from my collection. I've been sitting here trying to figure out if I think Final Girl is an IP-based game. Because it's kind of loosely...
Based on the definition we said earlier, technically, yes.
But they don't have the official endorsement of any of the actual movie properties. You know, they're all, like, subtly based on them, yeah. But they don't have the actual, like, this is Alien or this is Nightmare on... Like,
yeah,
it's influenced, but it's not an IP.
No, it's yeah, it riffs on existing IP, but it doesn't actually use that IP, so it's not actually using those to, you know...
It's more like a satire.
You should buy this game because you like this... Yeah, it's a satire, yeah.
Yeah, but I would definitely, yeah. Like, I mean, I've played Final Girl things that I haven't seen the IP for, you know, that have been really fun. So I think that stands alone, but I don't think that's an actual IP game because, like you said, it's really kind of riffing off of it. It's more for the general horror genre, not specifically the IPs themselves.
Well, I mean, a lot of the adventures and the monsters will be based on particular movies, particular characters. So they're definitely riffing off of very specific kinds of properties, but while completely bypassing having to pay for or get endorsement through the actual intellectual property in which it's based. There, so it's an interesting.
They avoided paying royalties. Mm.
Yeah, let's call it what it is, right? Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we think of something like Nemesis, where you know Nemesis is not, you know, it's based on aliens.
Nemesis is great, though. Yeah, I love it.
One thing I want to pivot to, because Heroes 3 got me thinking about this a little bit, and that's it's because I'm also looking at the video game board game adaptation Horizon Zero Dawn. So one thing that is not uncommon now, I would say, is just in general, in the general landscape of Kickstarters, you have really expensive Kickstarters now. And I think that some of that is riding on the nostalgia train here. Like Horizon Zero Dawn, like they have these really complicated miniatures. Heroes 3 honestly fits in the same category of like, mm-hmm. they have this huge range of miniatures that you could buy and like really high quality. Like they clearly honored the source material well, but as far as I know, Horizon Zero Dawn is a pretty mixed bag. Most people say that the game is not very good as a whole, but they at least did a good job with like the source material. Is it inherently a problem that I feel like some of these board games also are maybe taking advantage a little bit of people's love of the IP? Like they could probably get away with making a shitty game, to be honest, and still sell. And is that technically a problem? I don't know. Like I could have easily ended up with Heroes 3 being a shit board game.
It's a financial problem, not a technical problem. From a capitalist business perspective, yeah, you can make money doing it, but you're really milking a lot of the fan base for cash. And unfortunately, that's just the problem with being a super fan in some cases. That you have to get everything that, you know, that comes out related mm-hmm. to something that you like. I mean, we're both victims of this, mm-hmm. you know, but I think we should demand as consumers that the games be good games and not just something with our mm-hmm. favorite IP in it.
And that's
which is
also
why we need to be able to follow people like, you know, the Meeple Mentor who are going to let us know with their reviews what games are good so mm-hmm. we can know mm-hmm. whether we should buy them or not.
Yep. Boom. I mean, but it that's hard, right? Because as a maybe you need to intentionally go out of your way to review IP games that like you have no vested interest in whatsoever. Like it's the only way you could be objective about it, because otherwise there is no way, as much as I try to, that I will not be biased towards like reviewing the Heroes 3 game, because to me, it's already enough. They honored the source material. I would not be able to give an objective review of it. Like, honestly, mm-hmm.
Yeah, but there's IP games that I've played that I like the IP, but I don't like the game. So I mean, there's sometimes you just kind of have to admit this is a problem and like don't play, you know, these XYZ games, because like, yeah, I like that movie or I like that video game, but these are not good. Like,
okay, so let's. I actually, so we mentioned at the beginning of this episode that I was going to start with a warm-up question, and then we blew by and did not do the warm-up question. So why don't we...
We are on fire now, Sarah. We are burning 5,000 degrees.
So this all technically counts as intro. This is all technically part of the intro now.
Longest intro ever.
So we're going to warm up to end here. So before we like close this out, because I feel like we're getting close to time, what would, if you could make a board game out of any IP, what IP would you choose? And bonus, do you have a like production company that you would want to take it on, or a designer? Mine, I obviously mentioned before, being Puppy Cat, literally anybody could make that game and I would buy it, but specifically the collab people, because that game was beautiful. Like the miniatures were really good. I would want to see the miniatures from the Bee and Puppy Cat world made by that company.
You want a thick with 3 C's Puppy Cat butt?
Exactly.
A Diablo 2 board game would be pretty sick, but I don't know if it would be any good, to be honest. I'm trying to think of what publisher I would like, but I don't know. I would have a hard time imagining that they could capture the magic of it, but that would hit me in the nostalgia feels for sure. That's probably my second most played, like, per, you know, amount of hours in my life video game. That's probably pretty up there.
I have a couple suggestions for this one, and I don't know if there are existing games already for these IPs, so I'm just going to throw that out there that I don't know for sure, but I would say Indiana Jones deserves a really good tabletop game. I don't think it has one yet, or at least no one's told me about it. I think
there's plenty, you know, that have, like, you know, flirted with the IP for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there are games that feel like Indiana Jones, but I think if we had a themed one, it would just raise it that much higher. So perhaps if, like, the designers of Lost Ruins of Arnak wanted to tackle Indiana Jones and, like, fully delve into, you know, all the property characters and things like that, that could be really, really good. I think back to horror movies, the Saw franchise could be a good escape room type tabletop game. So the exit games or unlock games, those might be great publishers or designers for Saw.
Yeah.
and then Holly just came in and heard, I will say Holly just came in and suggested Arrested Development. The TV show would be funny.
Oh, dude, that would be hype. Yeah. Yeah, man.
We probably need to cut this out of the episode so you can go. You can go make the pitch to those companies.
Should rescue the money from the banana stand.
Oh my god! Yes,
that's great.
Oh my god! No, that would be the name of the game. It would. Yeah, it would be. It would be just be called the
money
banana
in the
stand.
Banana stand.
Yeah,
the money in the banana stand.
Yes.
Yeah. Always money in the banana stand. Nope.
Dude, your wife is on fire. That is the best suggestion of the night. 100%. Oh man,
that's amazing.
Not at all.
I did have another idea. There was I don't know if you've played this JRPG video game that came out last year called Sea of Stars, but in that video game, there is a made up fake tabletop game that you play in the game as, like, side quests. It's called Wheels. And I kept looking at this going, like, this is awesome. Like, they should make this for real. And I would totally put money on this. Huh. It's a great little tabletop game within the video game that would be perfect to be adapted to real life.
This is like when movies make fake bands who then have songs in the movies that are good and you just want to hear that band, but they're just a fake band.
What happens?
All right, guys. So I want to close this out with a fairly spicy question. And that is, in general, would you recommend an IP game overall? Like, it's one of those things to where, for example, when you had video games and then movies of video games were coming out, 8 times out of 10, they're a shit movie. Like, almost, it's very rare for them to be good. So with board games, are you safer than not with an IP game? I would say maybe, let's even just say towards more recent games where it seems like they at least seem to care about the source material and that they're just not just plastered on.
I would say generally, you have a higher risk with an IP game that they're cashing in on something and phoning it in than you would a general game where they've just created this from scratch and, like, made this new thing and they felt so passionate about it that they didn't need an IP. So I think in that way, I would probably say probably not. Because I think the incentives are there to make a less awesome game.
I think
if it's IP.
Myself, I have a very hard time generally recommending anything I haven't played. I'd say that, you know, does it being, you know, based on existing IP making more or less? I would say probably neither more nor less. I think there, you know, there's plenty of IP games that are bad, plenty that are good, plenty that are average. I don't know that I necessarily know that it being based on existing properties gives you any useful metric for how good the outcome is going to be. Because there's many existing games that are games that are based on nothing that are very bad as well. So, like, you know, I don't think it really gives me any strong confidence as to whether the outcome is going to be different from a randomly selected game otherwise.
This is why we need reviewers, right? I mean, we need people to actually play the game and give them their thoughts, because you can't, I think generalizing anything to that point is is mm-hmm. wasting your money, you know, because if you're just going to buy it because it has the right, you know, IP or name that, you know, you recognize, it's always going to be a 50-50. So I would say, mm-hmm. you know, right. I'm in line with you guys, save your money and wait for the review. And then basically go for games that are recommended as fun. And, you know, if you like Star Wars, there's thankfully Star Wars is like thousands of games, but there's a lot of quite good Star Wars tabletop games. So you don't have to just like hope that the new one's going to be good. You can go for ones that are already well liked.
Man, this is something we didn't touch on, unfortunately, even though I want to try to wrap up here, but I think one thing that's kind of interesting is how IPs can also have a reverse effect. So for me, I'm like, if I see another fucking Marvel game, I'm going to rip my eyeballs out. Like, I'm so over the Marvel IP and literally every game being plastered with it. It immediately makes me not want to touch the game, even if they're good games. Like, there's Marvel Champions, which is a very highly rated game, and I will never play it because I'm just done with the theme. I don't want to see it anymore.
There's just a lot of exhaustion right now with Marvel in general. I saw, you know, today, you know, people were reacting to the announcement that there's only going to be 3 Marvel movies and 2 TV series a year. And people saying, oh, why would you think I want to consume that much more Marvel at this point? You know, make it one a year if you think, you know, if you want me to pay attention. And I tend to toward the idea that, you know, if it's good, if it's a good game, if it's a good, you know, movie, if it's a good TV series, you know, I can take as many as you can do that are quality. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there's a lot of just exhaustion with Marvel all around at this point. And yeah, board games are not immune from that. There's a lot of board games with Marvel themes at this point.
I mean, let's be real. They emotionally wrecked me with, what was it? Endgame?
Endgame.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. After Endgame, I also kind of checked
and
out.
And then it's just in my brain. It's done. Cut them off. That's it. That's all you get. I was depressed for like, 2 weeks I was depressed after seeing that movie. So you can't do that to me and then have me come back for subsequent movies. Sorry. Not happening.
I wouldn't say I was that emotionally invested as you, but it was for me a good end point.
I don't know why it hit me so hard, but it did.
Spider-Man's death in that movie definitely crushed the room that I was watching the movie in. The number of people who including one of my you know, friends at the time who audibly expressed, you know, shock and dismay at that were pretty stunning. I was like, probably, you know, 20 people across the throughout the theater. Like it was probably one of the most emotionally you know, engaging movies I think I've ever seen with a room full of people. But
I think so to come back to the very last question that we brought up. Mm-hmm. I think one thing to keep in mind, everybody, when you are looking at, because I think to everybody's point here, it's important to look at reviews for these games. And all the more, when you're looking at Board Game Geek, for example, keep in mind, for the very same reasons that we've all talked about here, where nostalgia and people who like the IPs are the people who are most likely to buy them, they are also the most likely to be biased about them and most likely to review them higher than maybe they deserve, especially if they paid a lot of money for it. So I think these are all things to keep in mind when you're looking at reviews for them. I know that was like kind of when I was looking at general text reviews of some of these games, it was just a huge wall of like, oh yeah, this game's awesome. And then you kind of had the naysayer who's just like, look, I don't know anything about the IP and I think this game sucks. You know, like obviously they could also just be wrong, but I think it is important then to keep in mind like who the general audience that is reviewing that game is, and it's people who probably already like the IP anyway, but maybe that also means that you would like it if you like the IP. So really just be extra critical when you're looking at reviews when it comes to an IP based game, just because it's going to be really hard to make out like fact from fiction from some of these. So just
So I had jury duty this morning and they made us watch a video about unconscious bias. Because they don't want you to have, or like, they want you to recognize that unconscious bias is a thing that can happen and check yourself before you make a decision about like whether or not someone's going to jail. I got sent home early, so I didn't actually sit on a jury, but it kind of relates to this because the idea that you are biased and knowing that and reflecting on it can help you from making decisions. Like, ask yourself, like, if this were the game with these mechanics, but it didn't have like puppy cat on it. Would I be interested? If no, then maybe this is just not something that I should do. So just being aware of the bias, checking it, and asking yourself questions about it can help from like to keep you from spending money on a potentially bad game that you might regret.
I think Jared is polluting this podcast. It feels like we're informative and helpful and useful, and that's not our brand here, man.
No. My bad.
No. He actually plays board games that he reviews in the top 100. Okay.
Oh, that's great.
Oh man! All right, I think that's gonna wrap up our episode. Thank you guys so much for joining, and thank you so much to Jared. Again, you can find him Meeple Mentor on YouTube, and also cannot recommend enough Push Your Luck, the board game dictionary. It is a fantastic resource, and I've referenced it twice during this episode. So if you're watching the video, you can see me like looking down like this on my phone, looking at the board game dictionary. So definitely check that out.
Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on. Two episodes in a row. We've really appreciated you having being here with us. All right. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.